computer technology and the internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show will be about security updates, some things that you need to look for on your computer and make sure that they are removed if they're there, YouTube versus Vimeo as a marketing channel, and some things about Office 365 Personal, which is the home user version, and some other interesting security updates, perhaps about some voice over IP things as well. So let's get started. Let's start with the most important topic, which is please go and check your computer to find out whether or not a product called Microsoft Visual C++ 2005 Redistributable appears as an installed application in the Add Remove Programs area or the Programs and Features area. Ultimately, this 2005 version of Visual C++ Redistributable is no longer supported. It is completely deprecated software, and there is no security patch for it. So you really should be getting that off of your computer. Now, you may think to yourself, well, I've never installed C++. That's true. What you will find, though, is it's probably installed on your computer, and this is simply because a lot of applications historically have been reliant upon these Visual C++ redistributables. And at one point in time in the past, many applications were installing these are effectively like C++ runtime libraries. And many applications were reliant upon the 2008 version of this, which was then dependent on the 2005 version of this. So pretty much I can tell you every computer that I've looked at has it installed. And it is a ransomware exploitable application because you can't patch it anymore, because it's fully deprecated software, means you can't secure it, means you need to get it off your computer. So again, that is the Microsoft Visual C++ 2005 Redistributable. As of right now, if you still have the 2008 version on your computer, that's fine. That is still supported, and patches for that are being delivered via Windows Update. Okay, so now, you may be wondering, well, how did I run into this? Well, the magic of WatchGuard Fireboxes and the magic of how I architect networks is how this exploit in the wild effectively became discovered. So one of the things that we at QPC do that I think is, well, at least certainly from all the feedback I've received from security experts, is quite unique. And I'm not saying that we're the only ones that do it, but certainly in the SMB space, I think there's very, very few companies nationwide that are taking what's considered to be enterprise-grade security standards and best practices and bringing them to the SMB space, especially at the network security strategy layer. And so one of the things that we do is we utilize network security, not just at the perimeter, but literally at a micro-segmentation level. And with this, what it then gives you visibility into and certainly protections around is this traffic, device-to-device traffic on your local area network. So first off, your network has to actually be programmed and designed and architected correctly in order to facilitate this. And I almost never see this in any network that I have not architected. What I see prevalently, certainly almost ubiquitously used in the entire SMB space, is flat networks. Maybe if you're lucky, there might be a couple different subnets, but they never seem to get around to doing micro-segmentation. It's simply because the vast majority of the people that are servicing the SMB space and the SMB market don't have those skills, and they think that it's not important, and so they don't do it. And of course, customers are not demanding it simply because, well, if they were that savvy about networking in order to demand it, then I think they'd probably have the skills to do it themselves. But the reality is that that's just not the case. You're either a network security expert or you're not. And if somebody was a network security expert, they would be doing it themselves, right? They're not going to hire somebody else to do that. So when you do use micro-segmentation, what ends up happening is your security appliance has visibility into these packets. It then has the ability to apply security rules to those packets and stop things that it deems should be stopped, and then, of course, report on that. And I have something to say about that I, you know, is just, it's surprising that I even have to say this, but you actually have to have a reporting server for this. And the reason I say it's surprising that I have to say this, because, I mean, a lot of IT people that I talk to, it seems completely obvious to them that yes, if I have network equipment, I want to know what's going on with that network equipment. They inherently understand the necessity of having a server that collects this log data from these devices, because you may end up having to troubleshoot something that was something that occurred some time ago. And some time ago could be, what, 15 minutes ago, could be it occurred yesterday. It could be it's been potentially occurring over the last week. You know, you can't simply rely upon real-time traffic capture analysis, because in a lot of cases, that's just not going to cut it. I mean, it's only going to cut it in the circumstance where you have a low enough traffic volume, you can really isolate into it for troubleshooting, and then you also have the ability to drive that behavior that's triggering that traffic on demand. But that's just usually not the case. And oftentimes you'd have behavior reported to you by an end user or a couple end users, and they'd say, well, you know, I think it was roughly around this time. So they give you a window of like 4 hours of time, and they'll say, well, it happened yesterday. So you have to be able to have something to go back to that is going to show you all this historical log analysis, or you're really neutered from being able to do any sort of effective troubleshooting from that perspective. Okay, so now all that being said, so yes, you actually have to have a logging server. Don't think you can get by without one. Then you have to also have a SIEM analysis system, which is what's called a security incident and event monitoring analysis reporting server. Okay, that's usually the logging and the reporting, and the analysis is usually just one big tool. It's kind of a comprehensive tool set. And that should also be giving you email notifications for things that are concerning, you know, immediately concerning. So if you're the IT admin, you want to be receiving an email notification that says, oh, I think this, you know, IPS attempt, this intrusion attempt is going on with such and such PC, right? You really want to have an email that comes to you in near real time that is informing you about an active incident, right? So I can't stress how important that is, because imagine you have this ability to know in real time, and then you're not utilizing that. You know, you have that ability to be able to get out ahead of something before it's spread. And actually, in an ideal world, your security strategy itself would have already been blocking whatever the bad doo-doo was from propagating. And this is exactly what I've seen, you know, innumerable times, but I'm going to tell you about two very, very specific examples of this. Number one, within the last 6 months, I saw a situation where there was a PC that had gotten some malware on it, and that malware was attempting to do a brute force password attack against an Active Directory domain controller. Well, that clearly was a problem. Now, not only did we receive immediate notification, you know, near real-time email notification of this, but it also showed up in a weekly security summary report, right? So that's fantastic. And the only action that needed to happen from that was simply, hey, we've identified this PC. Somebody needs to go look at it and scrub it and check it out. And then, you know, you look at that PC, and if you can isolate down what it was the naughty thing that was doing the bad stuff, then you get rid of that successfully. Great. If not, you know, then somebody's going to wipe that computer and refresh it, right? Ultimately, though, the in-place network layer security technology stopped the attack dead in its tracks and then informed the human beings so that they could take further action. OK, Okay. Now, another example I'll tell you, I just saw yesterday that was rather, it was very interesting. It was very, very interesting while it was happening. So I happen to be doing some new network rules in order to accommodate a new voice over IP solution, and just looking at packets in general, it's just kind of standard best practice that I do is I look at packets after any sort of changes like that and just see what's happening and look for what I would consider to be anomalies. And in this anomaly analysis, I saw an IPS attack that said ransomware. Now, and I don't know about you, but anytime I see the word ransomware, that certainly draws my attention. So, honing in on that further, and first off, I'll say that the network security was stopping that dead in its tracks. Okay, so thumbs up for network security. And then again, double thumbs up for network security because it actually alerted and informed about what was going on so the humans could then do further investigation. So upon further investigation, I did what was called an IPS signature lookup, which then revealed that this was traffic that had a particular appearance, and that was traffic associated with a product called Microsoft Visual C++ 2005 redistributable that had a vulnerability in it, an unpatched vulnerability that is ransomware exploitable. Okay, so this is fantastic because not only was the potentially naughty thing blocked proactively, we were alerted to it. We were able to trace back through an IPS signature system exactly what it was. And what we ended up finding was that there was an application that was installed on a laptop that was making use of this old, unpatched, deprecated software. So, of course, the correct course of action was then to uninstall this software, reboot the computer, and then attempt to see if that computer continued to do that traffic or not. And so what we found was that after the uninstallation of this 2005 version of the C++ Visual Studio runtimes, this behavior ceased. And additional investigation revealed just simply that this is software that Microsoft is no longer patching. As I said, it's fully deprecated, and that means that the software manufacturer is not going to release security patches for it anymore. And then we did some dev testing on some additional systems, effectively going around and uninstalling the 2005 redistributable from other systems as well, rebooting them, making sure that they continued to function. And then you do enough of that to the point where you feel comfortable, and then you say, you know what, I think we can just roll this out across the entire organization and get this stuff uninstalled proactively. So it's really super important. I mean, it's so important that I just can't quantify it for you. Like, there's no email newsletter that you are going to get that tells you, oh, gee, the software that you're using on a bunch of your systems is deprecated and unpatchable. You need to proactively get it off of there. I mean, in a rare circumstance, you might actually receive a notification if you're on a special list. For example, when QuickTime was no longer going to be patched by Apple, if you were on what was effectively like an IT administrator's email list, we did receive notification that said QuickTime's not going to be patched anymore. And so if Apple is not going to patch QuickTime anymore, then you really just should get it uninstalled from your systems. And so taking action on that, we then proactively uninstalled QuickTime from all the computers where it was installed. But I have to say that that is the exception rather than the rule. It's fairly rare for you to be proactively receiving information talking about when software is going to be out of date and you need to stop using it. There is another good example of that that I can tell you about, which is so Windows 10 goes on effectively like an 18-month rotation schedule. And Microsoft is going to only ever support the current build and one prior. So in today's world, that would be Windows 10 build 1709 and then Windows 10 build 1607. Now, the only systems that I've seen where 1607 builds still exist are those that actually just don't have enough hard drive free space in order for the operating system update to occur. And in fact, these people receive notifications from Windows Update that says, you know, unable to update, you need to delete stuff. Now, the problem is that all of these computers do not have hard drives that are at least 256 gigs in size. Their hard drives are typically only 128 gigs in size, which is just not workable by any stretch of the imagination. If you have a computer that you put Windows Workstation operating system on, so we're talking Windows 10 Pro or even Windows 10 Home Edition, and then you install something like Microsoft Office and your typical apps like maybe Chrome or Firefox and, you know, 7-Zip, and I mean, you're just, you know, standard little puny apps, nothing that's really gigantic. The fact is, you've already sucked up 90% of that 128 gigs. So where do you have all this excess free space that can be used on a temporary basis to download a whole new build of Windows 10, do an overlay install, and then hold the uninstall or the rollback for 30 days, which is what the standard procedure for auto updating is. So fundamentally, these Windows 10 computers that do not have at least a 256 gig hard drive, they're impossible to upgrade. Just impossible. So at least not by a normal, you know, everyday standard user. You certainly could wipe them and then put build 1709 on there. You could absolutely do that. But now this is a matter of you're effectively doing a rebuild of a computer from scratch. You're not upgrading it. That's not an upgrade. That's you're rebuilding it. Okay. And then when the next build comes out, you're just going to have the same problem. So you're then faced with this question of, do I just get a larger hard drive and clone my old hard drive to the new one? That is possible. And in some cases, it does make sense. In a lot of cases, it doesn't make sense. I mean, if you're dealing with PC hardware that's out of warranty, I would never recommend that strategy. And in the case of something like maybe you bought a smaller Surface Pro tablet that did not have a 256 gig hard drive, that is not an upgradable hard drive in there. Like, you know, you can't like crack the case on a Surface and get in there and put in a different device. It just doesn't work that way. So now you're faced with a problem of, okay, well, I guess I'm going to either just run a bunch of unpatched stuff or I'm going to have to get a different device, you know, or you're going to have to do that big pain in the butt factor that I said, which is get a Windows 10, build 1709 DVD, and actually rip it to a bootable USB and then do a full reinstall from scratch. You know, so you're talking about futzing around with it for probably anywhere between 3 and 5 hours. And is that really what you want to do, especially when it's just going to happen again? All right. So I can't say enough about how important it is to have real network security. And I mean real network security, not just security theater, which is like, oh yeah, we're all protected at the perimeter, which I find the vast majority of time is totally baloney. Oh, by the way, with regards to that, so the TLS 1.3 security algorithm is now, you know, basically it's there for everyone to use in the browsers. And if you have not updated your security appliance may not know what to do with that with regards to deep packet inspection. And if your security appliance is not updated, then what you're going to find is browsers such as Chrome that are updated and are now being set to, by default, utilize TLS 1.3, they're going to break. And it's just going to look like you have no internet connection on that browser. So there's a lot of interesting things that go into this whole TLS upgrading. First of all, the old versions of SSL, you can't use them anymore. Even old versions of TLS, you can't use them anymore. And what I'm seeing on a regular basis, weekly now, is that there are so many content providers who, especially in the healthcare industry, this is the scary part. So many of these content providers in the healthcare industry have old certificates that do not provide adequate security, and their web server security configurations are also old, using old algorithms. So as soon as you try to access these websites utilizing any sort of a modern updated browser, whether we're talking about Edge, Firefox, or Chrome, then these websites tend to break anytime DPI is on. They just break. And websites that have been working for, you know, the last 10 months or more, now suddenly they've been breaking for the last month or so here, simply because of the fact that this new TLS standard is out and it's gone mainstream, meaning that it's pretty much supported in all the browsers now. And the web makers, the website makers for a lot of these healthcare sites, and I've seen it outside of the healthcare industry as well, but they are not keeping their stuff up to date like they should be. And so you end up with a problem where the website access does not work. So the lesson there is you have to keep everything up to date. I mean, if you're responsible for it, you have to keep it up to date. And let's say you're the operations manager at a business and your job is just to, you know, maybe interact with the IT vendor. Well, make sure that your IT vendor is actually keeping those things up to date. I mean, this is huge. I've got a client further out west who their former IT service provider did not do firmware updates or content updates for their security appliance for in excess of 3 years. So, you know, you can think that you're hiring somebody who knows what they're doing because they're with some big company. Well, the size of the company is irrelevant. I've seen some of the most well-run professional organizations are one-person shops of just a really highly skilled individual who will not bow down to the weaker strategies of supposedly like larger companies that are oftentimes run by salespeople, not engineers. And the salespeople are interested in sales volume, not necessarily in proactive fiduciary management for their clientele. So that's something to be aware of. Again, if you're the customer and you don't know to check, literally verify when was the last time that they did an update, then you should really be getting a second opinion. It would be different if you were getting regular invoices for that from them, say 4 times a year or something like that, that actually said that they updated the thing and they updated settings and they checked this and that. Or, you know, have you talked to them? What do they say about it? Okay. So I'm going to go on to the Office 365 personal cybercrime fighting new capabilities that are in place that I think are pretty spectacular, actually. So if you have Office 365 for Business, then, you know, you don't have, like, advanced threat protection is not built in by default. It is an add-on. It's $4 a month. It's effectively, you know, in the same price tag range as Trend Micro's Cloud App Security, although I think that Cloud App Security is a much better product. But fundamentally, what I'm saying is that's not built in. So the threat protection stuff is not built in by default. Furthermore, backups of your content in Office 365 Business are also not there by default. Recently, there's now been enhancements for any sort of SharePoint document libraries or OneDrive stored content with much better version control and these sorts of things. It's still not the same thing as what people would consider a comprehensive backup tool, which is why we're always advocating a cloud backup solution for Office 365. Now, the gap in all of this was always, well, that's great for the business people, but what about people that are subscribing to Office 365 Personal? So the challenge for those folks is that there was no security add-in product that you could get for it, and there was no backup product that you could get for it either, at least not natively. You could absolutely utilize any number of techniques to be able to back up your data that was synchronized locally. One of the ways you could do it in terms of a kind of cloud-to-cloud backup is if you used CloudBerry Backup. But it's a very sophisticated tool, and it's not exactly what I would characterize as, you know, home user appropriate. So any of these sort of cloud-to-cloud things are not really all that home user appropriate as far as I'm concerned. Now, this new functionality that is included in Office 365 Personal has to do with file restoring and file restoration capabilities in the case of ransomware incidents or something that goes and corrupts your stuff. So you now can recover to a previous point in time within the last 30 days. That's pretty cool. So this could also help you recover from an accidental mass deletion. Could be any sort of recovery from file corruption or ransomware, or frankly, any other catastrophic event. Now, the other really awesome thing that they're now including in it is detecting ransomware attacks, and then, of course, giving you that ability to restore your whole OneDrive content to a point in time. So this is, truly huge in terms of a feature advancement. They've also brought password-protected sharing links, email encryption, and things that have historically only been available in the business line product, like something that we all know as Azure Information Protection. They're now bringing to the Office 365 Personal product, allowing you to specify that emails that you send on a selective basis cannot be forwarded or copied, which is pretty darn cool. And they're also including advanced link checking. Now, what that's about is, let's say you receive an email, that link is going to be checked to find out whether it's malware, is it a phishing attack, a spear phishing attack, these sorts of things. And they're also doing advanced link checking inside of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Now, I'm going to stress again, this is only for people that are subscribing to Office 365 Personal. And there's two different plans that are called Office 365 Personal, and it's fine. This feature set is in both of those plans. And what we do on the business side for Office 365 business type subscriptions is a different approach to achieve these objectives, plus even more features. But because all of this functionality just really didn't exist historically in the personal product, it left those home users, those home subscribers, kind of in a gap where they didn't have that functionality. And if you're thinking to yourself, you're saying, well, I use Gmail, I don't care. Well, I'm going to be very blunt with you. Gmail does not have this capability. They just don't have it. Google and security are not two words that I would use in the same sentence. I'm going to leave this topic today with an interesting thing you should do some thinking about, which is, do you want to use a YouTube channel or a Vimeo subscription to market videos for your website? Or for your business in general? And I would argue that if you want to post things in a secondary fashion to YouTube, that's okay. But you have to be aware that on an hourly, probably a minute-by-minute basis, YouTube is going through all of the content and is delisting videos, unpublishing, revoking accounts, censoring people simply because the content that's there is either associated with a channel that had one video that they don't like for whatever reason, or they don't like all the videos, or they just, have received too many anti-popularity contest votes from other YouTube users, So basically, it is not a platform that you can count on at all. And any serious company who actually wants their video content to be available is going to use a platform like Vimeo. In fact, I know a lot of organizations that are just not using YouTube anymore whatsoever because their content can get revoked at any moment and create a gap in their marketing strategy. So it's just turning into being a waste of time. Well, that's it for today's show, and I hope you enjoyed it.
You've been listening to Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD-FM. You're listening.